activities. What a sad disappointment.
Pelosi talking to reporters on Capitol Hill at her weekly press conference. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is heading to Washington to meet with President Trump after New Yorkers were suspended from the Trusted Traveler program. Despite the Department of Homeland Security's claim that the move was rooted in safety, the Democratic governor from New York tells MSNBC he believes it's based off a difference in political opinion.
It's about retaliation. It's about punishing states that don't agree with them.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
February is Black History Month, and what better way to celebrate than through the sounds of music? Opening summer 2020 in Nashville, the National Museum of African American Music will feature more than 50 musical genres created and inspired by African Americans. Museum President and CEO H. Beecher Hicks III.
We are proud to be a first-of-its-kind museum dedicated to celebrating the role African Americans play in shaping the American soundtrack. When you step inside the museum, you'll be instantly immersed into what I like to call 56,000 square feet of funk. We have seven galleries filled with more than 1,500 artifacts from some of your favorite artists, from gospel and hip-hop to country and classical. You'll be able to trace generations of untold Black history within our walls. We are one nation under a groove, uniting all people through a shared history. And we are excited to welcome everyone to Nashville, America's Music City.
For more on the National Museum of African American Music, visit blackmusicmuseum.org.
The Health and Human Services Secretary is testifying on Capitol Hill. With the details, here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes in Washington.
Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar before the Senate Finance Committee today, largely testifying about his department's budget, but he also updated lawmakers on the coronavirus.
As of today, I can announce that the CDC has begun working with health departments in five cities to use its flu surveillance network to begin testing individuals with flu-like symptoms for the China coronavirus.
Defense attorneys for Harvey Weinstein are presenting closing arguments as their client is accused of rape. The defense will try to convince the jurors Weinstein is not guilty today, while prosecution will work to secure a guilty verdict tomorrow. Weinstein didn't take the stand before his defense team rested its case on Wednesday. Jury deliberations are expected to begin next Tuesday. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Are you tired of high cable TV rates? Sign up for Dish today and get a $500 bonus offer while supplies last. Plus, lock in your price for 2 years guaranteed. Call All American Dish, your Dish authorized retailer now.
800-610-5739. 800-610-5739. That's 800-610-5739. Offers require credit qualification, 24-month commitment, early termination fee, Eddie Auto Pay. Restrictions apply. Call for details.
President Trump is stepping up his criticism of Justice Department prosecutors after it was reported that the jury foreperson had posted anti-Trump and anti-Stone messages online. If, in fact, that is true, Fox News legal analyst and contributor Judge Andrew Napolitano tells Fox News Stone is owed a new trial.
If the judge discovers afterwards that there was a built-in inherent bias on the part of a member of the jury against the defendant,
right,
that is an automatic trigger for a new trial. She's going to have to call those jurors back in and interrogate them.
Is 9 years too much? That's what they recommended.
Absolutely too much. Is Roger Stone a danger to society? Absolutely not. Was anybody harmed as a result of what Roger Stone did? Absolutely not. Is the president of the United States of America, who is the chief federal law enforcement officer in the land, entitled to express an opinion to his attorney general about a case the DOJ is prosecuting? Of course he is.
A Florida woman is asking President Trump to help get her off a cruise ship. Gay Cordier and her husband are being quarantined off the coast of Japan on the Diamond Princess. She tells NBC News about the recent increase in confirmed corona cases aboard the ship.
This one made me think I was in hell. You know, when you have hope and you lose it for a minute, that's a really bad place to be.
Over 100 people on board have contracted the deadly virus. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design. This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression. Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is BobBurnsSpeaks.com. And I'm inviting you to listen to my show at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoons on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, entitled Awaken to Your Purpose. How many people...
Hook will explore why he still wants to play for the NFL, despite still being unsigned ever since his 2017 kneeling protests, which he said were against police mistreatment of African Americans. It should also provide a look into the former San Francisco QB's mindset over the past few years, insight from a man who rarely gives interviews. Kaepernick says the book will be coming out sometime later this year. Prosecutors in Georgia say a group of thieves drove around Atlanta in a Rolls Royce, pretending to be very well known and well connected as they scammed hotels out of tens of thousands of dollars. A complaint filed this week claims they ran up huge tabs at hotels, saying they worked for the entertainment firm Roc Nation, allegedly duping one hotel out of $45,000, another out of $39,000. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
The traffic is stuck.
Max Living, brought to you by the Max Challenge of Clinton, New Jersey. Join me, your host, Mark LaRose, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. right here on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. I'll be discussing important health and fitness subjects, featuring guests and success stories. We are here to help motivate you. It's a beautiful day. Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
On today's program, I'll be talking about the five time wasters that are killing your productivity. Why should you should use only business credit cards in your business. I'll talk about how to keep in touch with clients without irritating them. I'll discuss how you should answer the "What is your greatest weakness?" question on an interview. And I'll discuss how much money the average American has in their bank account. Thursday, February 13th, 2020. And I'll have all that more right now on Taking Care of Business. Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jim Gano, and this program is called Taking Care of Business. And for the next hour, we're going to talk about issues affecting businesses large and small here in beautiful Hunterdon County, New Jersey, and on the national scene as well. Before we do that, we take a brief check of the weather, and it's currently 39 degrees at 12:05. Forecast shows today we're going to have rain that will end early with a high of 55 and a low of 30. For tomorrow, it'll be mostly sunny, a high of 33 and a low of 15. Saturday, mostly sunny, a high of 35 and a low of 25. And for Sunday, we're going to have partly cloudy skies with a high of 48 degrees and a low of 28. Time to bring the jackets back out. And a current check of the financial markets shows that the Dow Jones Industrial is down 76.18 to 29,475.29. NASDAQ down 4.35 to 9721.61. S&P 500 is down 1.81 to 3377.64. Oil up 27 cents to $51.44 per barrel. Gold up $7.30 to $1,578.80 an ounce. All right. Well, it's time to break into the program. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com and WHCRDB. So glad you could be joining us this afternoon. And another wet, rainy, dreary day here in Flemington. And I'm assuming that we're done with winter. We're not going to have any snow because every time I look at the long-range forecast and take it out 2 weeks, everything, the temperatures are in the 40s, the 50s. No shot of snow this year. And so I guess, you know, no need to gas up the snow thrower or anything like that. Our business quote of the week comes to you each week at this time, and it comes to us from Crown Trophy of Flemington. And I always try to use celebrities, sports stars, political figures, famous people for their quotes. And I found this one from soccer star Mia Hamm. She says, "I've worked too hard and too long to let anything stand in the way of my goals. I will not let my teammates down, and I will not let myself down." And, of course, after I read the quote, I always ask you, how does that apply to you in your business? And it's an interesting question because, you know, especially when she brings in her teammates or herself. So let's read it again. It says, "I've worked too hard and too long to let anything stand in the way of my goals. I will not let my teammates down, and I will not let myself down." So when you talk about working in your business, when either as an employee or as an owner, have you worked too long and too hard on your goals to let anything stand in your way? Are you willing to crush through any barriers, break down any walls in order for success? And when you speak about your teammates, if you're an owner, I would assume that you're talking about your employees there. And if you're an employee, then it's the people that work around you. You don't want to be the one that when if things go wrong, everybody points to and says, "Hey, it's her fault, it's his fault," and be the guy who is being held responsible for the demise of the company. So again, "I've worked too hard and too long to let anything stand in the way of my goals. I won't let my teammates down, and I will not let myself down." I love that one. That was a good one. So all good. Now, let's talk about Flemington Borough today. Today is a very important day in history in Flemington. The case of the Lindbergh baby trial was concluded today back in 1935 where they found Bruno Hauptmann guilty. It happened right down the street at the courthouse and has been a bone of contention for the last 10 years with the Union Hotel project, saying that that was a historical location, which it wasn't. So that happened in 1935. Now, the interesting thing is I was driving into work today was I was listening to the NASCAR channel on Sirius XM, and Pete Pistone and Mike Bagley were doing their normal banter. And there's one segment in the program where they bring out the calendar, and they mentioned the trial of the century, as it was known. And then they started talking about things, and they said, "Mike, did you ever announce a race in Flemington?" He goes, "Yes, I did. I did the truck race there at Flemington Speedway." And the debacle during that race was they used these styrofoam billets cushion the impact of a crash against the concrete wall that used to be up at Flemington Speedway. And then it looked like it was snowing every time there was a crash, and the cleanup took forever. Just not a good example of NASCAR racing, as it were, when they brought in the Craftsman Truck Series back then. But it was just fun to go down, you know, memory lane as they were talking about the Flemington Speedway, and then of course when they were talking about the trial of the Lindbergh baby kidnapping. And so I tweeted to Pete Pistone. I said, "Yeah, the Flemington Speedway is now a Walmart and a Lowe's." And he wrote back. He goes, "So sad, you know, that we've lost so many of the small tracks across the country that you know handle the Saturday night racing, the Friday night racing." And how many of you used to take rides or go to Flemington to go to the races, getting mud kicked up in your face as the cars came around, you know, turn four? A gentleman came into my store a few years ago, and he brought me two things. He knew I liked racing, and he knew I was from Flemington. He owned a sports memorabilia shop, and he brought me two things. He brought me a little glass jar, and in that jar was a piece of dirt from the original Flemington Speedway track. And then he brought me a piece of asphalt when they tore up the track. So I have both dirt and asphalt from the Flemington Speedway. And just neat little keepsakes that you can call a little piece of history here in Flemington. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. When we come back, we'll get into the program. We're going to talk about the topics I mentioned at the top of the show. and run through the next 45 minutes as we try to get you ready for another week of work. And we'll do all that right after this.
The traffic is stuck. Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Stephen Graham, and you're listening to Taking Care of Business with Jim Cano on Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HunterdonChamberRadio.com. So glad you could join me. My name is Jim Gano, and I'm the host of this program. Every Thursday at noon, we get together to talk about business, one of my favorite subjects. So I want to talk to you about something that I've been doing a lot of research on. We're putting the finishing touches on a new book called The Action Plan that I'm writing, and it's basically designed to expose areas where companies can do better, employees can do better, the whole team can do better. And there's one area that I'm spending a lot of time on, and that's time wasting. Things that you waste time on at work that you don't necessarily consider to be time wasters anymore. So there's five here that I want to talk about. Five time wasters at work that are killing your productivity. Now, according to people who study such things, American workers are costing their employers big bucks by using the workday for non-work-related activities. This can include checking personal email, texting your kids, or spending too much time in the break room. Now, Brian Tracy is the chairman and CEO of Brian Tracy International, a company that provides training and motivation for individuals and businesses. And in this story, he's going to offer some specifics on how people are wasting time and what can be done to correct the problem. Do you ever feel like you can never get anything done at work? Are there time wasters at work that are killing your productivity that you might not realize? Your day seems to whiz by in a flurry of activity, but how much are you really getting done? Well, according to recent research, the answer is not that much. Now, with productivity down, American businesses are looking for the reasons why. And what they have found is astounding. Today's worker is wasting more time than ever before, and that is cutting deeply into employers' profits. Now, when surveyed, the average worker admitted to wasting about 3 hours of their workday on non-work-related tasks. Let's just stop right there. You're being surveyed by somebody about your workday, and you're telling them right out front, yeah, I really don't do much for about 3 hours out of my 8-hour day, okay? According to a report issued by Salary.com in 2018, when surveyed and they say they're giving up 3 hours of workday, that's three times as much time as employers had suspected and costing businesses about $759 billion in wasted salaries each year. But it gets worse. About 4% of workers admit to wasting as much as half of their workday doing things that have nothing to do with their jobs. So what exactly are people doing during their work hours? How are they spending their time? According to statistics, 64% of workers use the internet for personal use during the workday, and 50% make personal phone calls or send texts during office hours. As many as 60% of workers admit to making online purchases when they are supposed to be working, and even many more are playing video games. But the personal use of time aren't the only workday wasters impacting businesses. Here are some in-office wasters that employees report. Gossip accounts for 42%, social interaction with coworkers, 32%, snacks and breaks, 27%, meetings, 23%, in-office noise distractions, 24%. Now, how much are time wasters are costing us? None of us have to waste much time to have a real impact on a company's profit. It makes sense that wasting hours each day is going to cost your employer big bucks. But what about those small time wasters that you rarely think about? One report estimates that if every employee in the United States wastes a mere 36 seconds per day, the cost is an astronomical $120,484,000 every year. That's only if you waste 36 seconds a day. These people are saying they waste 3 hours. Now you multiply those few seconds by the minutes and hours most of us waste in a single day, and you can see how much productivity is being lost in America's workforce. How do you break the distraction habit? No matter how conscientious you are, we all need to look at the tasks that strip us of the time necessary to get the real work done. So here's a few of the most common culprits, along with some simple solutions. When it comes to office gossip, it's hard not to fall into this trap, but statistics show that gossiping eats away as much as an hour a day in some offices. The easiest solution is to just walk away when the gossip starts. Socialization. Limit your friendly banter to breaks and lunchtime. Distractions by noisy coworkers. If a noisy coworker keeps you from being productive, wear noise-canceling earphones or ask to have your cubicle moved to another part of the office or work in another part of the shop whenever possible. With the internet, unless you need it to get the job done, stay off the internet altogether while at work. Email. Sifting through dozens of emails every day can be a real time waster. Instead of reading and responding to every message when it comes in, set aside a time each day to handle non-emergent correspondence. Here's another tip. Only read the most important messages and skip over the rest. Meetings. If meetings are eating away at your productivity, do your best to eliminate unnecessary ones. If you really aren't required to be present, then skip it. And when you are required to be in the room, do your best not to sidetrack the discussion. Keeping everyone on task can save hours of table time every week. Snacks and breaks. Of course, everybody needs a break from time to time, but try to do your best to limit them to only a few minutes once or twice each day. Now, it may seem impossible to get through your to-do list in a mere 8-hour workday, but if you are diligent to eliminate these common time eaters, you may discover that your day goes much smoother and you get a lot more accomplished. Now, as I mentioned, this is a chapter I've been working on in my book, and I want to give you just a little scenario. It's a little math problem that you can work at. I think I mentioned it once before on the show, where there's a study by Harvard that says that the average worker wastes 2.75 hours per day at work. And when people are telling you, I'm so busy, it's not that you're so busy. It's that you aren't allowing yourself enough time to get the work done. That's the simple truth. If you're only going to, if you're going to try to get 8 hours worth of work done in a 5 1/4 hour workday, there's just not enough time in the day to make that happen. So everybody feels, I'm so busy. I guarantee you, you're not as busy as you think. So if you take 2.75 hours, I'm going to try to do this off memory. If you take 2.75 hours and you multiply that by 5 days in the workday, or 5 hours in the work week, rather, then you're at 13.75 lost hours for the week for just one employee. Think about the size of your organization as you start doing this math. Now, when you add that up, 13.75 hours per week times 52 weeks, it came out to somewhere around 742 hours a year. So you've lost 742 hours of productivity from just one employee if we're following the stats that have been already outlined for you. If you want to boil this down to the ridiculous, here's where it gets ugly. If you take that 742 and you divide it by 8, the number of hours in a day, it would equal close to 89 days of lost productivity. So in effect, you're basically giving up. You're only working three-quarters of the year. Every employee, three-quarters of the year. Which also means that your company can only work at about 75% all year long. Now, when a recession hits and everybody doesn't change their habits and they continue on with this method of wasting time, the company can't take on any more work because they would have to hire more people working at 75% to make that happen. But that's going to start affecting profits and everything else. So how do you fix it? Eliminate those distractions. Bosses need to be bosses, and they need to tell people, look, we're not here to shop at Macy's. We're not here to play games. We're not here to text our wives and girlfriends and boyfriends about what they want for dinner. Do that on your time. You have a break usually in the morning. You'll have 45 minutes or so for lunch. You'll be done with work, say 4:30, 5 o'clock, and then you have the whole night to do all your personal texting and everything else. But people, for some reason, feel as if they're entitled, and they can go ahead and do all this during the workday. It really isn't fair to the employer. It's not fair to the company. And if you're a publicly traded company, it's certainly not fair to your stockholders. So imagine what would happen now if you were to gain back just a little bit even. You know, if you came in, if you did away with texting during your workday, and I've told my family, I've told my friends, do not text me from 8 in the morning until 5:30 at night unless it is an absolute dire emergency, somebody's arm has fallen off, my house is on fire, or something. Don't bother texting me because you will not get a reply. I will not look at Facebook unless I'm doing something for my business. If I'm marketing something, I'm not going to be, don't hit me on Facebook. Don't poke me. Don't send me a video or anything like that. I'm not going to reply. I am going to be working. Don't call me if you're my wife and say, what do you want for dinner? Whatever you make is going to be great, but don't call me so that we can discuss it for 5 or 10 minutes. Again, if somebody needs something, it's urgent, I am there for you all the time. But otherwise, I don't want the nonsense to interrupt my day. And my employees work the same way. That's the culture we've built. But if you continue to allow these people, your employees, to shave minutes here, minutes there, text, play games. A lot of people get all wrapped up in March Madness and they watch the games on their computers. If you continue to allow that, then you're going to see a steady decline in your productivity. Deadlines are going to stop being made. And all of a sudden, you know, your customers are going to go somewhere else. So it's really time to think about how important all of those things, email, snacks and breaks, texting, etc., are to you. And I simply don't understand why people have to do this all day long. You wake up in the morning, let's say you wake up at 7, you don't have to be to work at 9. You can be texting all you want. You can be making phone calls. 10:30, you get a break, you got 15 minutes, catch up on everything. Lunch, you got 45 minutes, catch up on everything. Maybe there's an afternoon break. Again, that's when you want to be doing all of your personal stuff. Otherwise, please work for the company. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. And we've got a whole lot to talk about today. And we'll be getting into more of that when we come back from the break in just a few minutes. Just want to see what we'll be talking about. I had a question from a listener who said that they went on an interview and they were dumbstruck when the interviewer asked them, what is your greatest weakness? So I'm going to have a reply on what you can do to answer that question from some of the top HR minds and recruiting minds in the business. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
President Trump's former White House Chief of Staff John Kelly speaks to a college crowd in New Jersey last night, where he says Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman did the right thing when he voiced concerns about President Trump's Ukraine phone call. Speaking at Drew University, Kelly said Vindman was simply doing his job by reporting that he heard Trump ask his Ukrainian counterpart for an investigation into former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter. A huge contingent of law enforcement officers are looking for a missing 6-year-old girl in Casey, Alabama. She was last seen getting off her school bus Monday afternoon. A spokesman for the Department of Public Safety says,
we are looking for even the smallest piece of evidence
that could point us in the direction of bringing Faye home.
Police say some tips from the public have been coming in. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Money, 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 money. You got to have it. When you need it, what do? If you don't have a rich uncle, call LendingTree. With us, hundreds of banks compete for your business, so you'll get loans with competitive interest rates, and in some cases, with no closing costs. So here's the deal. If you need money, call us. Do you want to refinance your current loan? Are you 62 or older and interested in a reverse mortgage? Then call LendingTree now. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. We've closed over $250 billion in loans. We know what we're doing and can help you. Call right now for a free quote. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. 800-634-1315. That's 800-634-1315. NMLS number 1136.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. So glad you could join me. So there is a question being used by many employers and HR personnel where they will ask, what are your strengths and what is your greatest weakness? And this story is going to talk about how to answer the greatest weakness question. Now, the interview question, what's your greatest weakness, is one of the most pointless and offensive questions that you can ask a job applicant. And if you're somebody who works in HR, I would tell you to remove that question from your discussions altogether. But interviewers are still asking it every day. They don't realize that well-brought-up people don't ask perfect strangers about their weaknesses. They don't realize that asking the question, what's your greatest weakness, marks them as just another clueless, by-the-book HR or recruiting drone. We have to feel sorry for them, really. The obnoxious question of what's your greatest weakness should have been retired from the corporate and institutional recruiting playbook at least 20 years ago. So here are five reasons this is one of the worst interview questions ever asked of a job seeker. You're an interviewer, not a therapist. It is none of your business what someone's weaknesses are. It is cowardly to ask a personal question about someone's weaknesses without sharing your own weaknesses at the same time. Doing so conveys the message, I will happily ask you questions I wouldn't answer myself. I'm in the power position, you're not. It's also only a cultural construct that people have weaknesses at all. Some people subscribe to that view. It is a popular view in the United States, but many people living elsewhere believe that people are perfectly equipped for their missions here on Earth. If a weakness is something you wish you could do better than you can, then there will always be millions more things that you can't do than things that you can do. What makes some of these things weaknesses? If you're interested in them, you'll get better at them over time, and if you're not, you won't. What's your greatest weakness is a miserable interview question, if only because it is so trite. An interviewer who relies on lame, done-to-death interview questions tells the world he or she doesn't have the insight or creativity to improve on the Mad Men-era traditional interview script, and that is sad. Now, if you're asked the weakness question on a job interview, you have two choices. You can get up and leave the interview, and there are certainly situations where that may be the best course of action. But if you want to stick around, you have to answer the question. Now, most of us have heard that the best answer to what's your greatest weakness is to share a weakness that is really a strength, like a tendency to work too hard or to be demanding of yourself. But those lame, done-to-death answers are just as bad as the original lame, done-to-death question. Here's another way to answer the question. What's your greatest weakness? So the interviewer says, so, Andy, what would you say is your greatest weakness? Andy might reply, I used to stress about a number of things that I thought I should be better at than I was. My first job out of college, I worried that I should be better at creating spreadsheets. I took classes in Excel, and I learned a lot, but over time, I realized that I didn't really care about spreadsheets. I moved closer and closer to creative work with every job I took after that. My initial concern that I wasn't good enough at spreadsheets was really just my fear of stepping into my power. Nowadays, I don't think of myself as a person with weaknesses. There are a lot of things I'm never going to be good at, and that's okay. It would be a bad use of my time to try to get better at those things. My job is to get better at the things I love to do, things I'm already good at, like art direction and design. Andy shifted the frame when he answered the weakness question in a non-traditional way. He made the interviewer think, and that is the best thing you can do in a job interview. If the interviewer is not actively thinking, you can be sure that he or she is miles away in their mind, thinking about other things. In that case, they will forget you 2 minutes after the interview is concluded. Andy took the conversation to a higher level when he questioned the notion of weakness rather than saying, my weakness is that I'm too conscientious about my work, like one more submissive job seeker in the endless stream of them. Now, will Andy's interviewer like his answer to the weakness question? Andy doesn't really care whether the interviewer loves him or hates him. He only wants to work with people who likes his brand of jazz. He spends way too many hours at work to be willing to work with people that don't get him and thus don't deserve him. You spend a lot of hours at work, too. Don't you deserve to be alongside people who get you? Forget all that nonsense in the last two sentences for a minute. Going back to the HR person, and having worked in recruiting for 8 years, I saw hundreds and hundreds of interviews. I did hundreds of debriefs with my clients and my candidates. If you're in human resources, make it real. It doesn't have to be, let's review date by date your resume. It doesn't have to be, tell me your strengths, tell me your weaknesses. Get to know the individual, because you're asking them these benign questions, but you're asking them, we want you to come here 4 days, 5 days out of the week, 8-9 hours a day, and we want you to contribute and make our company better. How are they going to do that? It's not by finding out what they're weak at. It's by finding out their strengths. It's by finding out their likes. It's by finding out who they are as a person and what drives them. And those are the questions that you want to be asking, not what are you bad at, which is another way of saying what are your weaknesses. So, again, if you're in HR, please remove that question from your repertoire and come up with something a little more important. Asking people to tell you about themselves, it's overused, but there may be something in there. Or you can specifically say, tell me a little bit about yourself, i.e., what sports do you like? Find out about the person, not just about what's on the resume. All right, I'm getting off my soapbox now. Now, this is a story I have been talking about for probably the last year. Some people have written me to thank me because I harp on the show about the need for 401ks, the need for investing, the need for IRAs, you know, individual retirement accounts, so that you won't be working until you're 95. You won't be a checkout cashier at Wegmans when you're 78 years old. You will be hopefully somewhere enjoying your retirement. So the question is, how much money does the average American have in their bank account? And these numbers may shock you. So this is your bank account right now. If you were to pull up your banking information on your computer, which you won't do at work because that's a time waster, but if you were to pull it up, what would it say? How much is in your checking account? How much is in your savings account? And then what do you have in your retirement account? Here we go. Now, despite living in what is likely the wealthiest nation to ever have existed, Americans are having a hard time getting by. As most people are well aware of at this point, wage stagnation and numerous structural economic changes over the years have led to a shrinking middle class, fewer and fewer good jobs, and calls for political policies that were once thought to be too poisonous to touch, like a $15 minimum wage, for example. Now, given that most people are, relatively speaking, doing just fine, what do Americans have to whine about? We have refrigerators, televisions, smartphones, all things that are inconceivable in many parts of the world, even to this day. But still, people can't escape the feeling that the screws continue to turn. While facing even more uncertainty about the future, Americans are turning to strongmen, political figures, or false hopes that things will turn in their favor. Are Americans truly struggling? It's impossible to levy one simple judgment that encapsulates everyone in the country. But we can look at averages, and a good place to start is to look at how much money the average person has in their bank account. Even this might not paint the most accurate picture, as incredibly high earners and billionaires can skew the numbers quite a bit. Now, while those who are deep in debt will still have some money in an account somewhere, it does give us a starting point to look at. As for how much the average American has in their bank account, all signs point to this number, $4,436, a number that comes from a study by bank consulting firm Moeb Services in 2014. This is an amount that accounts for averages in people's checking accounts specifically and was notable a couple of years ago because it represented a significant jump from the 2012 numbers. What's even more amazing is how much higher that figure was since 2007, just prior to the Great Recession. At that time, the average American only had $788 in their checking accounts. One reason for the change? More people want to have cash on hand for immediate expenses rather than having it tied up in retirement accounts or other investments. Now, it's not necessarily that people are richer, though we're clearly in a better economic situation. It's that people are managing their finances differently. But having a few thousand in your bank account is a bit different than being wealthy. As mentioned, people are going to have money in the bank. It's when you incorporate debt and other factors that we get a more accurate picture of the American average American's actual financial status. How much does the average American have in their savings account? The average American may have some financial liquidity available on their checking account, but when it comes to a savings account or investments, it's not as pretty of a picture. A lot has been made of the retirement crisis in America, with lots of people headed for retirement with little or no savings and investments. And millions more are not making enough to cover basic living costs, let alone saving their stock money for later. A 2015 survey from Go Banking Rates really drives this point home. According to that survey, 62% of Americans have less than $1,000 in savings. About 21% don't even have a savings account. So here's a way to bring that all together. This is a little scary. So stick with me because we're going to give the category and percentages. How much money do you have in your savings account? 21% said they don't have a savings account. $0 in a savings account was responded by 28% of the respondents, meaning 49% of all Americans either don't have a savings account or have no money in it. 9% said they have just the minimum balance requirement. Some will say, some banks will make you keep $500 or $1,000 or $2,500. Less than $1,000 was responded by 13%, $1,000 to $4,999, 10%, $5,000 to $99,99, 5%, $10,000 or more, 14%. The rather alarming status of American savings is mirrored by other studies as well. Notably, a 2013 report from the Federal Reserve says that of the 4,000 or so people they surveyed, 31% of respondents reported having no retirement savings or pension, including 19% of those ages 55 to 64. And 25% don't know how they will pay their expenses in retirement. For a lot of people, this means one thing. They're one or two missed paychecks away from being in a whole lot of trouble. You may be reading through all of this and thinking that you're surprisingly below average, but there are tons of factors that can play into how much liquid cash you have at any given time. Worrying about how you stack up to your friends, family members, and neighbors won't do you much good. You can, however, start looking at your personal finance strategies to put yourself on more solid ground. The first and most basic thing you can do is to put together a budget. This can be as simple as taking your income into consideration and noting your monthly expenses. If your expenses gobble up all of your income, you're going to need to look for areas to save money. This is easier said than done, of course, but if you can free up some money somehow by canceling cable TV, perhaps a renegotiated payment plan, you'll find some wiggle room. Any dues and subscriptions you may have that you're not using, get rid of them. Then the goal is to take that money and start saving it. And there are many strategies and methods you can use to start saving and investing. The first step is in almost all of them is to build up an emergency stash. That's basically a savings account containing enough money to cover your expenses for several months. In the event of some sort of a medical emergency or job loss, this could be your lifeline. Before you know it, your accounts will be above average and you'll be able to sleep at night. Your emergency savings is only the first step. You're going to want to keep your budgeting and belt-tightening habits in place as long as possible. Your real goal isn't to just become average, after all. You want to start saving and investing so that you can tackle both short- and long-term financial goals. That means paying your light bill this month and retiring at some point, hopefully. If you want to get to work immediately, there are two main things you can do. Find ways to increase your income or continue cutting expenses. You can live like a hermit, caveman if you want, but most people want to enjoy their lives a little, so don't go crazy with the expenses. When it comes to increasing your income, you have a lot of options. You can pick up a side gig, working for Uber or getting a second job, for instance, or you can ask for a raise. You can also find another job that is willing to pay you more. It'll take some work, but job hopping can land you a big raise, assuming that you play your cards right. If you do manage to get your hands on some extra money, be sure to put it to work. You don't need to upgrade every aspect of your lifestyle. Start investing, get an IRA, start buying investment funds, or even buy property or start a business. Building wealth requires a multi-pronged blitzkrieg, but it only will bear fruit if you're well-disciplined. So the takeaway here is that regardless of age, and it is I panic. I am actually scared for people when I talk to them and they say they have no money in their savings account. They've depleted it. And that could be for anything from health issues, loss of a job, you had to use your savings, putting a kid through college and you didn't qualify for financial aid, whatever the reason, if you're in your 50s and you don't have enough saved for 6 months, you're in trouble. How will you retire? How much is it going to take to retire? If you and your spouse are just going to live off of your Social Security, you need to meet with somebody. And every year the Social Security Administration sends out an envelope. I just got one the other day with your summary of benefits. And it should be able to let you calculate how much you're going to receive when you retire. So look at those two totals, your spouse and yourself, and figure out how does that compare, that income, with what you're currently spending. And if there's a huge gap, that could have been offset by a 401k, that could have been offset by an IRA, or you're going to have to offset it with some other form of income. So it is a great time, particularly in your 50s. You know, I used to joke with people, you know, they say, oh, I'm a financial planner. I said, well, if I had any finances, I'd let you plan them. Now that I have finances, it's time to make sure that everything is taken care of. I don't care if you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. I want you to meet with a financial planner, and I want you to, and you can pick whoever you want. I'm not telling you who to go to, but I want you to meet with a financial planner and have them kind of roadmap out the rest of your life. It'll be a little scary if you're in your 50s or 60s and you don't have much. If you're in your 20s or 30s, now is the time to be planning for your future, and by that I mean when you're in your 60s. The average lifespan of an American right now, I think, is somewhere around 81 years. And if that's true, and you're going to retire at 65, how are you going to live those last 16 years of your life? What, and on what? So please take that advice and go out, find a financial planner, and ask them both the investing strategy. Do you want to be aggressive or conservative? Or what can happen? And every financial planner will tell you, no matter your age, you can start saving today. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about where you should draw the line between persistence and pestering and learn how to keep in touch with your clients without irritating them. We'll be right back.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hunt and Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hunt and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
Aw, you lucky dog, you. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. So glad you could join me. My name is Jim Gano, the owner of Crown Trophy here in Flemington. And always excited to get together with you on a Thursday to talk about business. There's times in business when you want to follow up with a client, you want to talk to them, even when they're not buying, and there's that fine line between being persistent and being a pest. So that's what we want to talk about now. So there's, again, that fine line between persistence and just downright being annoying. And your customers need to know that they are valued. They certainly don't want to be pestered or feel pressured into buying. So how do you know when you've crossed the line from friendly follow-up into an irritating sales call? Better yet, how do you avoid getting to that point in the first place? So here are a few ways to retain your rapport while still keeping in touch with your clients regularly. First, you want to develop a personal relationship. Now, the foundation of all sales is building relationships. People don't want to feel as if they're just a transaction. They're just a paycheck for you. So when you spend the time developing personal associations with your clients, you dispel some of the awkwardness that sometimes develops into strictly business relationships. Getting to know your customers will be the first step in revealing your true motives to your client, confirming to them that you're not there just to make a sale and then run. You're there to offer them support and guidance throughout the process, and you'll be ready to assist them should they run into any problems. A client that has this confidence will not be annoyed by the occasional follow-up. They will welcome the chance to let you know how the product is working and what they will need from you in the future. You also want to keep track with a sales report. Nothing is more uncomfortable than receiving a sales call where the salesperson obviously doesn't remember your previous discussions. So having to repeat the same information is frustrating, and your client is bound to feel unimportant if their salesperson couldn't even bother to make a note of where they left off in the last conversation. There's a lot of different software programs out there. ACT is one where you can catalog every phone call you've ever made and what was discussed. And you can even have a calendar function that will remind you when to call and what to call about. One simple solution to this blunder is simply to log all sales calls in a sales report. This enables you to make a physical note of the date and time of each call, along with details that fill in the gaps in the conversation. And with that method, your salespeople are able to keep themselves apprised of where each customer is in the sales process and any other personal details that may stimulate conversation and further their personal relationship with the client. Simple stuff like in the fall, you're talking to a guy and you say, hey, you know, you sound kind of down. Oh, the Giants lost yesterday. Did you see that game? Well, now you have a connection. You know, he's a Giants fan. Or, hey, it's my wife's birthday. I got to cut this short. I got to run out and buy her something. Again, those are notes that go into that CRM software. So using CRM can help you organize your outreach. Another useful tool in your quest for better salesperson-client relationships is what we call customer relationship management software. It's a fantastic way to digitally manage both when and whom you call. It allows you to not only schedule calls, but also inputs details about each call for better communication when you finally do pick up the phone. CRM's biggest benefit, however, is that it helps you consolidate information. Each salesperson will be inputting data into the same software system so that you can easily see reports on sales calls to be sure everyone is staying up on their follow-ups. This also eases transitions if a client ever ends up being passed on to someone other than the usual salesperson, as this new team member can simply look up the customer's details and see exactly where their colleague left off. You want to always work together and communicate as a team. Now, it may seem basic, but another way to prevent overcalling your clients is by ensuring good communication between members of the sales team. Collaboration and discussion help you formulate plans of action all together, so the burden of calling isn't placed only on one individual. This also keeps everyone informed of what's expected in terms of sales logging and provides more accountability as team members can check in on each other. Hey, how'd your call go this afternoon? Do you think X would help to get them to the next step? Perhaps even more important than accountability reasons, good communication builds a sense of camaraderie amongst sales members so that they know where to turn if they're stuck on a problem. And you also have to know when it's time to give up. Now, sometimes you just have to know when to quit. It's never pleasant to have to give up a potential client, but you will certainly have instances where it's better to just move on and pursue other leads. Obviously, if a lead gives you a solid no, that's an immediate indicator that your time is better spent elsewhere. However, sometimes potential clients can be a little less straightforward, which makes knowing when to give up a little trickier. There will be indicators along the way that your lead is just window shopping. For instance, if all communication ceases abruptly or the client is communicative but keeps you hanging for months on end without a solid yes or no. In these cases, move on to other leads, but send a quick note in 6 months just to keep the door open on your end. As a salesperson, your own intuition will be your best aid to you in regarding your client's needs. However, when intuition just isn't enough, staying organized and keeping detailed records of calls can bridge the gap and help you know whether to back off or push ahead. Above all, work at fostering personal relationships with your clients, and don't be discouraged if you're occasionally met with disappointment. I can't tell you how important it is, both being a client and being the salesperson, on maintaining that relationship over the course of the year. If you want to make it, the one thing I described to somebody one time, and it was like this aha light bulb moment, was I don't want anybody to walk in the door of our store thinking that, you know, we're looking at them with dollar signs in our eyes. Oh, there's Bill. Last time he spent $1,000. That's never how we greet people. We greet them with a hello. I invited some of our customers to my son's wedding. I have gotten text messages during a, I remember I got a text message during a snowstorm when one of my customers' wives had a baby, and I was one of the first people to get a picture of the baby. That's the kind of relationships you're looking for. I always caution people when I say this, but there is a fine line between friendship and business, and you have to establish those boundaries. I will be your friend. We will work together. I will do whatever I can for you to make this the best experience you have. Just don't abuse that and ask me for more. And I've gone out of my way. I have one customer who, a particular product that I do, but takes a ton of time that I just don't have, he will set up the files, bring them into our shop, print them on our large format printer, and pay me for the material he uses. I don't have to tie up my time or one of my employees' times. He does that for us, and he gets the product that he needs. So it works. And, you know, I have customers that will tell me, you know, if I'm doing, I have a big project coming up in the next 2 weeks. Hey, do you want me to come in and help you unpack boxes, pack boxes, whatever the case may be? I was like, who does that? Who's going to give up their time on a Saturday or a Friday night to come help me unload boxes? But that's how my customers are. And you can have that relationship pretty much in any industry. I've often told the story of the gentleman that when I was recruiting, cut me off short. I finally got him on the phone. He goes, Jim, I apologize. I just remembered today's my anniversary. I got to go get something for my wife. I put his information in my calendar that it was his anniversary, and I diaried it for 1 year the day before. And I would call him the day before every year, say, Jack, don't forget, tomorrow's your anniversary. Oh, you're a lifesaver. Thank you. This guy was extremely busy traveling the world. So by me reminding him that it was his anniversary, I got more and more job orders as a result. Keep it real. Keep it personal, but also keep it professional. In sports, in NCAA men's basketball, Baylor leads the AP Top 25 poll, followed by Gonzaga, Kansas, San Diego State, and Louisville. Dayton, Duke, Florida State, Maryland, and Seton Hall round out the top 10. The NFL has reinstated Myles Garrett from indefinite suspension after his helmet swinging incident in Pittsburgh. The San Diego Chargers have released quarterback Phillip Rivers. The NHL regular season is underway. The NBA regular season is underway. In the NHL, if you saw it the other night on the news, it was a St. Louis Blues player who had a cardiac event on the bench, collapsed, fell down. They had to do CPR on him and use a defibrillator. He has regained consciousness and is doing well, but undergoing further tests in the hospital. We wish him very well. And in NASCAR news, there are just 3 more days till the Daytona 500. The green flag drops 2:30 on Sunday. I cannot wait. Well, as always, it's been my pleasure joining you today, and I always end the show with some great advice I got from my father that when I was just 6 years old that guides me in my personal and professional life every day. Maybe you can use it in your lives as well when he said, never let it rest until your good is better and your better is best. If you have ideas for upcoming program topics or guests, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter at JimGano83, or on Facebook on the show's page, Taking Care of Business with Jim Gano. For more information about me and my businesses, visit JimGano.com. I am Jim Gano, and I'm taking care of business. Make it a productive week, everybody. And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business. And working overtime. Work out.
Listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families.
Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is accusing President Trump of assaulting the rule of law in the Roger Stone case. Pelosi also criticizes Attorney General Bill Barr's handling of the case.
The Attorney General has stooped to such levels. He's lied to Congress, for which he will be in contempt. He has engaged in these